Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's all about, and you'd make a deal with the devil himself if he'd just help you out. You've run out of hope and you feel like a dope. You don't know which way to go. Well, don't sing the blues. I got real good news. There's help on the radio. So welcome to Website Wednesday with Johnny and
how we're going to adapt that when we start doing the Saturday night show, because Patrick will be joining us about once a month on Saturday nights to help solve some computer problems.
We'll just edit out the Wednesday and do a shouting Saturday. Saturday.
S-A-T-U-R-T-A-Y.
Like the Bay City Rollers. Hello, Dr. Patrick. How are you today?
How are you all doing?
Good.
I'm doing great.
And again, we
have to start with a woohoo.
That's
of
right.
course. And again, for anybody wondering, Patrick, Dr. Patrick Christman is Director of Educational Technology at the Keck School of Medicine at USC. And before we get into all kinds of computer stuff, we want to bring it back to Southwest Airlines. We were talking earlier about Southwest Airlines, and Patrick, his wife Christine, and our grandson Joey, or Joseph, to be formal,
yeah.
We're supposed to be joining us this Friday.
Yeah.
Sadly, that ain't going to happen. Patrick, can you take us through a little bit of your Southwest airline experience?
So we've been watching this from afar. We were planning to fly out, as Steve mentioned, on Friday. And the plane was going to go from Ontario, sort of Los Angeles area, to Phoenix, and then into Chicago O'Hare. And we kept hearing just nightmare stories about what was going on with Southwest, especially with baggage claim. And we tried to reschedule, but we couldn't actually find any schedule sites that we could get to. So we would go to the Southwest website or said, we're down, or if we tried to make any changes, it just wouldn't allow us to do it. And we kind of decided, you know, I just don't want to risk it. So we gave up our seat. So I kind of feel that, you know, we're giving up our seats for people who might have been trapped in the airport since before Christmas. Selfishly, I'm also saying that, you know, I'd rather not get halfway to the trip, you know, getting to Phoenix and getting stuck in Phoenix with no way back to Los Angeles, no way back to Chicago, no way to get a rental car because the rental cars are gone, and our luggage, God knows where, because the pictures of what's going on with the luggage is just nightmarish. It's going to take Southwest a couple weeks to get back up to running. So,
and they're admitting that.
Canceling the trip.
Yeah, they are admitting it's going to take them that long. So at least you got to give them props for that.
But to make it up to my son, we're taking him to Disneyland next week. So.
Oh, okay. Good.
But now let me bring it back to computers. Because one of the first things when we talked with Patrick earlier this week, one of the first things you said, and this was even before it became a part of the news, you said, well, they have one of the most antiquated computer setups in the industry. So this was nobody's secret. And you can't answer this question, but why the heck didn't Southwest update their computer system? That would have solved a lot of these problems.
Two reasons. One, it's really expensive. And two, anybody who's ever changed a system this big and this complex it never works. You do an enterprise resource planning platform and you change from one vendor to another or from an in-house platform to another vendor, it just doesn't work. And it's going to take years for them to fix this issue. I think the CEO is gone. I think he's going to be fired in this situation.
Yeah. But
when we're talking about the scheduling software, we're not talking about the software that moves the planes or what you and
right.
I see.
Right.
We're talking about the software that moves the pilots and the flight attendants. It knows where they are and moves them from point A to point B. What's shocking to a lot of people is that software is not really automated, doesn't really have a web interface for the pilots to go into. And if you need to make a change, somebody has to go manually into the system and make the change.
Now,
and
how
that's
does
kind of scary?
I don't know how much you know about this, but how much does that differ from the software that other airline companies have?
Hugely different. Most other airlines actually rely on an outside vendor to do it for them. Southwest does it in-house, which is shocking. It's okay for a small airline, but Southwest is such a huge airline.
So this is
unique for Southwest. It works for them because, again, Southwest system, again, they can't buy an off-the-shelf system that's used for United or Delta. Because United has the hub and spoke model where you have to fly to Chicago or you have to fly to Newark and then you change planes there and go to someplace else. The way Southwest goes is you have a plane that goes from Ontario, Los Angeles area, to Phoenix, to Bozeman, to Billings, to, you know, it just left and right across the country. There's no point to point for these things where there's any sort of predictability for the flights.
Oh.
It helps them keep their costs down, but if there's any nudge on the system, like the weather this last couple of days, and it sort of causes their scheduling system to say, I can't keep up, while the other major mainline carriers have no problems catching up, Southwest is now left with their legacy software. And it's really hard. That's why Southwest canceled all the flights was, look, we got to get our breath back. We got to get this thing cleared. So we're canceling flights because we have to. We just need to clean up. And it's going to take I'm not sure they get back until, a week or two for bounce.
Well, I think it might have been Jordan, the CEO, said probably late January they feel like they could get back into their rhythm and there would be some normalcy. Well, you're talking a month from now.
But also, Patrick, I wonder, you said, it would have been a huge deal to update the system. Would it have been any more of a huge deal than what we're dealing with right now?
And the reality is it wouldn't nearly have been as bad. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things where I guarantee you the Southwest is going to make these changes. It's going to take them years to change this software. My six-year-old son, who is very much looking forward to coming to Chicago and cried his eyes out when he found out he couldn't come. But
so did we.
One of the things he said many, many times was, I tried to tell you, you should have flown United.
He did.
At six.
Patrick is not making this up.
He said, why?
You should have flown United on next Tuesday. That was...
And when there was first rumbling that you might have to change, I remember what he said. Well, let's just call United. Let's just not wait.
Now we should back up. And for the assembled multitude who doesn't know, Joseph is an airline geek.
He is plane obsessed.
Oh, boy.
Yes, he is.
I'm not making this up. The three times this year that he's cried the hardest, I'm not making this up, had to do with Boeing. And a six-year-old. One was when he found out that Boeing was moving its headquarters from Chicago to Virginia. Total meltdown. He thought this was the saddest news he ever heard.
Because you guys would drive to the building and he would just look at the building.
When we were in Chicago, he wanted to go drive by the Boeing building.
Yeah, and you went late one night for him to see the building.
Yeah, the second time was when he discovered that the 747 was no longer being made for passenger flights.
Yeah.
Destroyed him. The third one was I had to go to New York for a conference, and I couldn't take him. He was heartbroken not because he couldn't go to New York. He was heartbroken because he couldn't fly on a United 787 Dreamliner, which is one of the things that he's always wanted to do. So much so, we bought him a United 787 Dreamliner model for Christmas. That was one of his Christmas gifts.
And I asked him, what did Santa bring you? And he said, well, I got a Dreamliner. I was like, well, good. And sometimes,
my kid is an AV geek. He loves aviation.
Oh, boy, does he.
During the pandemic, we would go down to Proud Bird outside of LAX and just watch planes land. He loves it.
And there have been a lot of times when Joseph has been here in Chicago, and we're standing outside of our house.
Amazing.
And he's looking up at the planes fly, and he's identifying
by the tail
the planes flying.
The biggest one for me was, oh, that's Iberia. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That's Iberia. Oh, yes, Gigi, Iberia has these colors. And okay, whatever you say, young man.
Okay, more about planes and computers.
And your questions, because we're getting some people texting in with some very good questions. So if you've got questions for Patrick, you can text, you can call us, 312-981-7200. This is our edition of Website Wednesday.
We're talking with Dr. Patrick Crispin, Director of Educational Technology at the Keck School of Medicine at USC. This is Website Wednesday. There is no such thing as a dumb computer question. We're going to talk about Post and Mastodon and a whole lot of other things, too. Mm-hmm. And Patrick, you can't see our screen with some of the texts that are coming in. Joseph has a lot of fans right now.
Yes, and my favorite story, Patrick, is a woman that texted and said her son was exactly like that when he was 5 years old. He had such a love for, it was actually her grandson, had such a love for airplanes. He's now a freshman at Lewis University, and he got his pilot's license this summer.
Oh, and thanks for the story. That's fantastic. And I should also say that we took my son to New York over Thanksgiving just so he could fly in a 787 Dreamliner United livery.
Just so he could fly on that plane. All right. Well, again,
the Statue of Liberty.
Text coming in. Yeah, the Statue of Liberty was important. That's his favorite girl. This question is for Patrick regarding internet security on smartphones. And the texter says, is internet via mobile data more secure than internet via Wi-Fi? Is it, mobile data, even pretty close to perfectly secure, assuming websites are using HTTPS? So any light you could shed on this?
And it depends on what you're doing and what tools you're using, and really whether you're using Android or iOS. Let me unpack that. If you're using your web browser and you're going to a secure site, something that begins with HTTPS, as the texter said, it's relatively secure. There's nothing really to worry about. If you're using some apps and using a browser built into an app, there could be some concern about the security of what you're doing there. And know that you're being tracked and some of that data is being sold and given away. They're not giving your credit card information, but they're tracking you as you go around the internet. If you're using an iOS device, you are going to be more secure from that sort of tracking, or at least that sort of tracking is going to say, hey, do you want to be tracked? Apple gives you the option of opting out. On an Android device, it doesn't have those sort of robust privacy settings, but it's still a robust platform and it's relatively safe. So as long as you're not going onto the dark web and you're not doing really nasty things, it's safe. I don't think it's safer than any other way that you would connect to the internet.
But if
you're really concerned about it, I would recommend going through a VPN first. And you can sign up for a VPN, just do a Google search for VPN provider, or even talk to a local internet service provider or your cable company and see if they offer VPN, and you can then connect to them, which is sort of a secure tunnel that makes it much more difficult for people to track you on the internet.
And for anybody who doesn't know, VPN is virtual private network.
Yes.
And iOS is iPhone operating system, correct?
Yes, iPhone.
Okay, yep. So iPhone versus Android.
But even if you're using Android, aren't there some browsers you can use that will give you a better encrypted form of internet travel?
Most of the modern name brand browsers are trustworthy out there. I will tell you that there, and we'll talk about this in the new year, There are some changes that are coming to Chrome that concern me, especially when it comes to privacy, to the point where I think I know a lot of Chrome users are going to be looking for the exits, even on mobile devices.
Oh, interesting. You tease you.
It's a tease.
Reason to listen to us on Saturday nights in the new year.
Yes. Steve, is DuckDuckGo what
DuckDuckGo
you use?
DuckDuckGo is what I use.
Where you can just go about your business and you are somewhat
you don't get
anonymous.
Tracked. Somewhat protected.
Yeah, because you always have to qualify it, at least at this point in time. Have you left Twitter yet, Patrick? Are you still on Twitter?
I have not. I'm still on Twitter, but I'm eyeing the exits. I've certainly cut down on the number of posts that I post on Twitter, but I'm concerned about the direction that Twitter is going. It's troubling. What about you guys?
Well, if anybody wants to look at the Steve and Johnny page on Twitter, you will see that we're not doing nearly as many posts on Twitter as we used
to.
Occasionally we'll put something up, but like you, we're eyeing the exits, and I don't think we're going to be on Twitter very much longer.
And I really, really liked Twitter when there was a news event. Something was happening in the world, and you got this instantaneous feedback from around the world. Yeah, you have to pick and choose, you know, what you're going to buy into, but it was fascinating to see these stories develop on Twitter.
And even if it wasn't a news event, we'd be watching the Sox games.
Yes.
And on Twitter, Johnny's just following.
And I'm with the Sox Nation on Twitter as every play is being analyzed. And that was kind of exciting, too. And I don't see me doing that in the future.
There are so many social media platforms out there. Everybody kind of describes Facebook as, you know, it's for your mom. TikTok is for your kids and the Chinese government. Instagram is for celebrities and narcissists and people post selfies of themselves. It really is. It's people posing selfies of themselves with a Starbucks. And it's like, ooh, look, you have $5. Congratulations. And Twitter really had been for Western journalists and for politicians. The thing is, it was, and it still is, a very small social media platform. You know, the number of millions of average users per year or per month is really low compared to any of the other ones out there. Elon Musk, as you probably have heard, bought Twitter, paid way too much for it, partly because he got tricked into it, partly because he thought it would be funny to pay $54.20 per share. Get it? $54.20? Get it? Get it?
No.
$4.20 as in let's get
four.
High.
Oh,
duh.
So he paid $54.20 a share for a company that at the time was probably worth $40 a share and now is worth maybe $10 a share. And this is a company that makes its money from advertising, drove the advertisers away, is trying to do where you do a subscription model, but that isn't going to cover the bills. Advertisers aren't going to touch it for a while. He's allowing some people who were banned to come back on. And a lot of people are looking for the exits. What has popped up, there are two ones. One is Mastodon. And Mastodon is federated. What that means is instead of going to Twitter, where you go to twitter.com and you log in and there's one Twitter site, Mastodon is federated. In other words, there are thousands of Mastodon servers all over the country, and you have to go sign into one that sort of matches your likes and what you believe in.
I'm hitting the pause button because we have to take a quick break, but then we'll come back. We're going to talk about Mastodon and Post
and your calls and your texts.
Your calls. And I will just say that the first day that Musk was at Twitter, we should have had a clue because there was this big picture of him. He walked in and he had a big toilet seat that he brought with him.
A toilet,
That should have been a clue about what was going to happen.
Well, on a much brighter note, let's go over to weather and traffic with Gabe.
Steve King and Johnny Putman and for Lisa Dent on WGN Radio. And we're talking with Patrick Crisman, trying to solve some computer problems. And we got some people that have been hanging on the line for a while. So let's jump to a phone call or two. And let's go to line one. And that would be
Elaine.
Elaine, hi. What can we help you with, Elaine?
Hi, and it's so great to hear you on the radio.
Well, thank
wonderful.
You. Thank you.
I purchased an external hard drive. Never had one before. You know, not real smart with my regular computer, but I just need to know I can just plug it in. I don't have to initialize it. Is that correct? I can just plug it in and start saving to it?
As long as it's a name brand, absolutely, just plug it in. Yeah. It will start working. In fact, most of this, the external hard drives come with updated drivers for your computer, all the software you need to be able to set it up for backups, or you can ignore that software and just use it as a hard drive on your computer. They're all over the place. I'm a huge fan of the Samsung series, T7 series external hard drives, a solid state. Even with a spinning disk, you're good, and it's actually a really good idea to have a backup of your data. So having an external hard drive in your arsenal is a very smart idea. Congratulations, Elaine. Well, you did the right thing.
I'm curious, Elaine, what is it? Did somebody tell you needed this, or what prompted you to make the purchase?
I'm getting all my pictures on my computer. I've got all these camera pictures, you know, hard copies, and, you know, where are they going to go in 10 years? So I'm trying to save as many as possible, and my storage on my laptop is just about full.
Good move.
So I need to expand a little bit.
It's a very smart idea to have a second backup for everything. So save it to your hard drive. If you can afford it, I would also think about getting yet one more backup, which would be an online cloud backup. I use Backblaze. There's a whole bunch of different platforms out there. And what it does is it makes a copy of your files online that you can save. You can do it in Dropbox. You can do a box in a whole bunch of other places. But that way, if for some reason or other there's a problem in your house, say that somebody breaks into the house and steals a computer and the laptop, your pictures are still safe because they're going to be online in a secure vault that you control.
Do we do that, Steve?
Nope.
That's what I thought. Well, now, see, if you'd come to Chicago, you could have set us up with that, Patrick. Golly. Well, Elaine, you did a good thing, apparently. Thanks for calling. Nice talking to you.
I'm trying.
You sure are.
Tech is way over my head, but I'm doing my best.
That's right. And remember, as we always say, you ain't born knowing this stuff. So take it easy on yourself. Don't beat yourself up.
Patrick, just before we broke, you were starting to talk about Post and Mastodon and some alternatives to Twitter.
So Mastodon, the way it works is you have to find a server to get an account on. I recommend everybody get an account. They're absolutely free, but it's not like going to Mastodon.com and signing up. You have to find a Mastodon server. Do a Google search for Fediverse, Fediverse, because it's a federated universe, Fediverse. And you're going to find servers out there that you can then sign up to and get an account on. That's how you get on the Mastodon. It looks a little like Twitter, more like TweetDeck. It's not exactly like Twitter. It's not supposed to be like Twitter. It's a replacement. The thing that's really exciting to me is something called Post.News, created by former Waze CEO Noam Bardin. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, back to Mastodon, because people are asking one more time, Fediverse.
F-E-D, just do a Google search for Fediverse, Fediverse, as in Federated Universe.
Got it.
And what that does is it shows you all of the Mastodon servers, and you can go sign up for one. Say if you're interested in the White Sox, there might be a White Sox server. Mm-hmm. Or you're interested in Crochet, there might be a Crochet server. And then once you're on, you're in the Federated Universe, you can see all the posts from everybody else, but you just have your own little corner of the world.
And I also, one of the browsers I use is Vivaldi, which is a really secure browser. Vivaldi just had an update, and part of that update is they have their own Mastodon server. Which is kind of cool.
I will tell you, it's a concern for me in that everybody who stands up a server is opening themselves up to regulatory compliance issues. They are responsible for the copyright that's posted on their site or the child sexual abuse materials, and if they're not monitoring that, they could be opening themselves up. So it's a concern. It's sort of a club sport, but you're playing a varsity game. That's the reason why we don't see a lot of internet service providers anymore, you know, local internet service providers, because the cost of dealing with copyright and some of these takedown notices is pretty compelling. On the Post News is the other one. That's the one.
Let me jump in with something, and you tell me if I've got this right. For people who are wondering, well, okay, if I go to the White Sox server, then how do I connect with the other ones? If I understand it correctly, think of all of these servers as the United States.
Yeah.
If you're in Illinois, that's your server.
You're connected.
But can you drive to California? Sure.
You can connect. You can connect and see everybody on the system. It's just you've got your own little thing. And I said White Sox server. I don't know if the White Sox have a server, but you just you'll have a server based on your interests that you can then join, and it then introduces you to other people in your community who might have like-minded information for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Post. Post was founded by the dude who gave us Waze. Right?
The dude who gave us Waze, and the thing that it's really meant to be a future news site. Eventually, the idea is, and I think we've all been on Twitter or any other place where we read an article, and there's a link to an article, and it's like, oh, I'd really like to read that article. You click on the article, and it says, this article is only available to our subscribers. Would you like to pay us $20 a month for the rest of your life to read this one article? And everybody goes, no, and they leave. Post is supposed to deal with that issue, and what it's going to be is it allows you to read news articles without having to leave the site, and it allows you to actually pay or buy individual articles, where instead of paying $20 a month to read, you know, Fortune just for one article, you might pay a nickel or a dime or a quarter or something like that to read an article that you truly want to that truly interests you. Or if you read something and there's an original creator who's created something, you can send them a tip. So that's the whole thing. Post is still being built from the ground up. You can sign up at post.news. There is a long waiting list. Expect to be on the waiting list for a long time. They're taking their time.
Hmm.
When you come in, though, it's going to look a lot like Instagram in that it's a very clean interface. Just be aware, they're building this as we're talking. Mm-hmm. I was one of the first 1,000 subscribers to Post, and the thing since I've joined, I've just been exponential growth, but it's still a new site. I think it's the future of news, but it's not there yet. But you can get there. At Mastodon or Post are sort of things to look to have just in case Twitter goes belly up or everybody is kicked off of Twitter or everybody heads for the exits.
And I was in the waiting line for Post, and I was just recently approved, so I'm going to start checking that out. We should mention, a blatant plug. I'm turning on the blatant plug light, that when we start to do our Saturday night show, that Patrick Crispin will be joining us once a month on Saturday nights, and we will try to solve some of your computer problems in the wee hours of the morning.
And I have an assignment for you, because a texter said, Patrick, could you give us a general overview of good computer practices? And that's some real basic information. We used to do that every Wednesday night, talk about some basic stuff. So maybe we can get together a list, and we'll talk about that when you join us for the first time in January, Patrick. Thank you so much.
Fab Five's no longer going to work.
That's right. Yeah. That's the Fab Five. You're right. I could say that in my sleep. Thank you so much. And hug our boy for us. And we will talk to you in January. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.